Hello and welcome to another edition, a special edition of Center Circle Live. Marty Thompson and Armin Badakian with you this week, as are some special guests, Armin.
Yeah, we've got Charlie O'Connor Clark returning to the show after his extended hiatus.
Hello.
That's it? That's all you got for us? Tell the crowd what you've been up to.
For the past couple months, I've been doing kind of a summer job that I've done for the last 7 years, working with a variety village camps, working with a lot of children with special needs and behavioral concerns. So that's kind of something that I've been doing for a while, and I wanted to get that in one more time because it means a lot to me.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's quite admirable, Charlie.
Thank you.
We're also joined today by the new director of content of our CPL editorial team, John Molinaro. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you, boys. How are you?
We're pretty good. John joins us off of an illustrious career where he was last with Sportsnet. You've also worked at CBC Sports.
Yep.
Covered the Canadian men's game, the women's game. You've covered the club game. You've basically seen it all. You've seen, my right-hand side when you and I used to cover Toronto FC together
for
a little
while. Yeah,
that's right. What was it, seats 10 and 12 or something? 10 and 11?
Yeah, 10 and I was 12, so
yeah,
you would have
been
11. You would have been 11.
But yeah, so you're joining us here at CPL Editorial, and we're really glad to have you on board as we continue to tell Canada's budding soccer story. And as Marty alluded to, this is a very special edition of our episode because it's kind of midway through the fall season. And we're starting to see how things are shaking up. We also just saw Forge take on Olympia in CONCACAF League action. And we've got plenty to talk about. So, Marty, let's just jump right into it. What's the first thing on our docket?
I think the first thing has to be Forge.
Yeah.
Taking down Cavalry 1-0 on Sunday and taking top spot in the CPL standings. As you mentioned, Armin, kind of in a interesting midpoint of the season where things are maybe starting to shape up a little bit more.
Yeah, so it seems like there's a few teams that have emerged as fall contenders, significantly more teams than I think were kind of in the mix for the spring. And I think, Marty, as you pointed out in your article...
I did.
If the fall was a 10-match sprint, this would be a significant... kind of like change in narrative in terms of how we're approaching these final 2 weeks.
Well, so, Forge is 9 matches unbeaten.
Yep.
And Charlie, you were looking at today comparing, combining, I should say, the fall and the spring titles. Mm-hmm. And if you do that, put it into a single table, Forge is
well
ahead.
Oh, Forge
ahead,
in
right?
a walk. I think it might even be double-digit points that they're ahead of. FC Edmonton would be in second. And because no other team really was challenging kind of in the mix in the spring. Forge was actually in there until mid-June.
Yeah, and I see Sunday as kind of being a chance where we could maybe look back and see that the spring season, just the way that it was formatted and just the way that Cavalry started, it kind of painted a picture for us.
Yeah,
right?
Definitely.
In a way and kind of defined the
season. I think the thing that's emerged in this fall season is this healthy mix. I think a 6-point gap is probably still manageable. Typically around the world, 6 points is an indication that you're still in the hunt. Anything more than that and it starts to become a question mark. And for our purposes, as we approach this midway point, we're just about at the midway point for every single team. It's 5 teams within 6 points of one another. We've got Forge at the very top, Cavalry just 1 point behind them, then you've got Edmonton, Pacific, and York 9 all challenging for that number 3 spot. And I think because of that, it's a good opportunity for us to maybe look at these 5 contenders and maybe break down what it is about their fall campaigns that could prove fruitful at the very end, and maybe one area that, you know, they still need to improve on, maybe one reason why they won't win the fall. So, Marty, why don't you get us started on this particular topic? Do you have a team in mind for your contender?
I really like Pacific.
Pacific FC. All right.
Yeah. So there are 10 points from 8 matches. They do have a game at hand, I guess, on Edmonton. And could even that up if they win in their next game. But as mentioned this week, the amount of youth players that they are playing is literally 9 times the amount of some teams in this league.
So,
and the way that they're improving is great to see.
If you haven't seen it yet, go check it out. It's on campiel.ca. Every single team has now hit the 1,000-minute threshold, which was set as a sort of a bar at the start of the season, but Pacific FC, with a combination of like 8 or 9 different players, has smashed 9,000 and will probably hit 10,000 at some point this year.
Yeah,
in terms of minutes afforded to these under 21 talents.
Pick a player; they played over 1,000 minutes.
Yeah,
under 21.
It's incredible.
Like Baldissimo, Verhoeven, all of them.
Terrence
Campbell. The core of their team.
Yeah.
Their best players are under 21s.
Yeah.
So while I agree with you that I definitely think the youth-led movement is a huge plus for Pacific FC, I would argue that that's also the reason why they might not win the fall. I think they probably need a few years together before they really get going.
Yeah, and I still think that my reason why too is that, you know, I think that their defense is also still a little suspect in the way that they were giving up balls early or goals rather early in the season. That would be my reason why. But again, that, like, the plus side is like the way that Taron Campbell plays is just like there's so much confidence there, right? There's so much of that. So yeah, I'm gonna go Pacific.
That's cool. Yeah. If you're Michael Silverbauer right now, do you say Taron Campbell is my starter, or off the back of Marcus Haber's brace in like 37 minutes, does he figure back into the mix? What do you guys think?
I don't know. That's an interesting question. I honestly don't know. I don't have an opinion, to be perfectly frank.
Well, I mean, Haber had about a striker's dream on Saturday.
He did play well, yeah.
A goal on his first touch on the ball, and then two shots, two goals at the end of it.
Little penalty.
Yeah. Oh, the way that he grabbed the ball immediately was hilarious. He's just like, oh, yeah, I'm taking this.
So I know Martin Baumann, he pondered this exact question before this game even was like on his docket. And I think it's finally become a pressing issue for Michael Silverbauer is, you know, Taron Campbell's on a tear. He's leading our goal-scoring charts. But at the same time, Marcus Haber is both a proven commodity and, like, if you're looking at it from a pure physical standpoint, he's got Taron Campbell beat on all the, like, kind of measurements that you look for. So do you play 4-4-2? Do you kind of give Haber the start again?
I think you got to – I don't know. I think you have to go 4-4-2 just because of the way Haber's – I think that performance on the weekend was really, you know, good. And I think you have to sort of work him into the lineup a little bit more regularly. So, yeah, if it means going 4-4-2, then – you know, I just don't see how you can continue, you know, you can't sort of use Haber going forward.
And I like that system too, because it highlights Zach Verhoeven as well, who's having like a monster year.
Totally.
And, you know, that's another chance for a good young player to grow.
Yeah, I think the guy who may end up getting pushed out there if we are seeing Taron Campbell and Haber in there together might be Victor Blasco, which is
crazy to think about.
Maybe unfortunate because he's also had an incredible fall campaign, I think.
Yeah.
But I think on the balance, like, you can't justify benching either Campbell or Haber.
Right.
Yeah, for those efforts, Pacific currently has 10 points. Another team on 10 points is York 9 FC. Charlie, who I know you said was your kind of contender. What are you seeing out of York 9 FC?
So the problem is we don't really know what this team is going to be day in and day out, because we've seen them break out and score 6 goals on HFX Wanderers, and then we've seen them just completely incapable of finishing any of their abundant chances against Valor or Pacific. So I think we know and we've seen that they have the talent, the attacking talent, to just go on a complete tear and like really, really push forward and push Calvary at the top of the table. Where it kind of breaks down for me though is that their back line has been really suspect, I think.
Especially of the last 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we saw it in Nathan Ingham's face. He was so frustrated on that second Edmonton goal. Like, he was screaming at his defenders.
There was a big miscommunication, though. Totally. Like, Didic had free rein on that. And then Ongaro, too.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It was both. And
what I wonder is, I mean, in the spring season, I think this was maybe one of their biggest strengths, was their back line. They had the pairing of Gasparato and Gogarty in the middle was pretty solid. But then the past few weeks, they've had a lot more kind of turnover, I think, in that back line. It's been a little bit less consistent. And I'm wondering if that might be a factor in some of these communication breakdowns we're seeing back there?
Yeah, it's definitely possible. I think York 9 has maybe 2 more games before it's kind of a done and dusted deal. I think Kurt on One Soccer mentioned that he thinks it's over for them. I don't know. I'm not quite there yet, but
I think strikes me as a bit premature.
Yeah, it is a little premature, but it is definitely getting to that point where every single point starts to matter. And for my money, I think that's why I still see Cavalry as being the team that will possibly pip Forge and take this title, just because I think Cavalry has better long-term kind of sustainability than Forge, especially because Forge has CONCACAF League like obligations now. Possibly if they advance, they have the 1-0 advantage. If they advance, then you've got, you know, more games added to your schedule, whereas Cavalry's, you know, playing singularly for the fall title. And I think Cavalry probably has something to prove. I think they'd like to win both the spring and the fall and show people, like, you know, much of Canada soccer has been Ontario and Quebec specific for a very long time. Alberta is one of those places that haven't necessarily had the opportunity to be under the spotlight. And wouldn't you want to be Tommy Wilden Jr.'s team right now, you know, making a push and showing the rest of the country that Alberta's got what it takes? I think the only thing holding them back is potentially a lack of motivation, although they haven't really shown it. I think when it comes push comes to shove, teams like Forge that actually have something on the line versus Cavalry that will always have on the back of their mind this thing that, well, we're already in, that could be a difference maker. And another team out of Alberta, though, John, I know you were saying this a little earlier today, FC Edmonton, yeah, they're another big competitor, and I don't think we should rule them out either.
No, and and one of the reasons why I think is I'm really big on the addition of Tony Chani. I think he's been, you know, exactly the type of midfielder they need. Someone with some veteran experience. He adds a little bit of grit and steel in the midfield. You know, he's had, you know, pretty successful MLS career. So I think he's been a big addition. I'm really looking forward. I mean, he's got a couple games under his belt, but I'm really looking forward to see how he can sort of progress that team forward. Obviously, I think what's going against them is just the schedule. They have, I think both Forge and Cavalry have games in hand on them.
Yep.
Plus, they got to play Cavalry twice. They got to play Forge once. So those are going to be.
There are some heavyweights.
Those are like three very tough games where you're talking about 9 points are on the table. So that's going to be really tough for them.
I think in the end of the day, the team that is currently on the top is another team that I think a lot of people are expecting to remain on the top. Forge FC, who I think we mentioned have some CONCACAF League obligations, but players starting to come into their own there. Jonathan Grant expressing himself in a real, you know, significant way against Cavalry, scoring that game-winning goal. They also beat Olympia in the first leg, which is not an easy game to win. I think that can maybe be the make or break. It's how do they balance CONCACAF League with regular season play?
Well, that's the thing is now if you're Forge, you do need to win this fall, right? I mean, it's they still have CONCACAF League, obviously, and they are ahead, but they still really need to focus on it as well as the CONCACAF League. But, I mean, do you think that they could like win the CONCACAF League?
I think that's a good question, Marty. I think the thing that I would be curious to know is where Bobby Smyrniotis is placing his priorities. Would he rather win the fall, or would he rather win the CONCACAF League, or does he think his team has enough to win both?
I haven't talked to him, but I'd like to think that he thinks he's got enough to do both. I mean, you know, he's fielded pretty strong lineups in CONCACAF. I think he appreciates that the fall season is there to win as well. So I think, you know, I think he goes for both.
Yeah, he does definitely have a deep team, probably deeper than most CPL rosters. I think guys coming off the bench have shown that they're, you know, they have the propensity to even be starters. And so when you have options like Cadel Thomas, Marcel Zajac coming off your bench, I mean, there's definitely options there.
Switching back to CPL action, as we mentioned, kind of a weird like halfway point, you know, end of the summer as well as we get ready for Labor Day. And at this point in the fall season, I'm just wondering what players have kind of stood out for you. Now we're looking at, what, about 60 games total or a little bit more than that? Big sample size. Who's standing out?
Well, the obvious first answer has to be Easton Ongaro, right?
Yeah, probably.
At FC Edmonton, he's come into the side and one of the not their U Sports draft pick, but he signed with the club, right?
Yeah.
Young guy, and he just can't seem to stop scoring.
I love Ongaro's story because he's an Edmonton boy. His family has a rich history of soccer in Edmonton.
Well-known
his
name.
Uncle, his brothers, he's got cousins. They're all products of this Edmonton soccer kind of youth system, and the fact that he's like now playing first division professional soccer in Canada in Edmonton and killing it, like, what else do you want, you know? Like, that's the fairy tale. No,
yeah it is for me. It's Ryan Telfer, because really? I think if you put Ryan Telfer on Cavalry or Forge, I think we're talking about him a whole lot more than we are now. You know, the way that he has performed on a team that sometimes, like you mentioned, Charlie, is just hot and cold. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not going to bring up his goal he scored against Edmonton on Sunday as a big like.
Yeah, what was that?
Look what he's capable of doing. haven't seen it. It was kind of a looping cross that bounced in the box.
Was that on purpose, you think? Did he shoot? Do you think he takes credit for that goal?
Yes.
Yeah.
Just because I'm arguing on behalf of Ryan Telfer, yes, he did. No, I think if he's on a different team, I think we're talking about him a lot more.
I think Ryan Telfer was still emergent in spring, though. I wouldn't give him the fall credit. I think he's just been pretty consistent with his form. Like, Easton Ngaro was a non-factor in the spring.
Yeah.
And now he's one of the, I guess, preeminent strikers in this league. My player might not be too conventional, but I am going York 9. I've been very surprised with Maury Doner. I think
that's a good show.
I like that.
I think he's been quiet. Quietly one of the best right backs in this league. And I think I can juxtapose him with Jonathan Grant, who we spoke about a little bit earlier in the show. I think Jonathan Grant is newly emerging, and after his performance against Cavalry, he said, you know, I'm coming back from injury. I have really high standards for myself. I want to make sure I'm reaching those standards. So I think Grant is one of those players that we could see emerge in the latter half of this fall. But from July 1st to today, Maury Doner has quietly made that right back spot his own, and has to the point where, you know, I'm starting to see the way he's making tackles and the consistency of his play. He's getting more comfortable going forward, challenging on the attack. I think we're talking about possibly the right back of the season here.
Well, let's not forget that the goal he scored in the first game of the fall season.
Yeah,
plus that. At Winnipeg as well.
Yeah, for me, and he's been sort of, I think he was, you know, one of the best players during the spring season. And so I don't know that he's necessarily emerged, but who I've been really impressed with is just Marco Carducci.
Yeah.
I think he's been, you know, hands down one of the best goalkeeper in the league. You saw the saves that he made, you know, in the game Sunday. Against Forge, and really kind of kept them when Forge, it seemed like they were really sort of pressing. So he's just been a standout, and it's nice to see, because, you know, I think everyone knows the history with, you know, the Whitecaps and what happened there, and to see him really sort of emerge as, I think, just a poised and composed and mature shot stopper and someone you can rely on. It's been one of the better stories in the league this year.
Absolutely. And the thing about Carducci is the consistency. Like, I know you mentioned it's spring, but we also saw other goalkeepers emerge in the spring, like Nathan Ingham and Connor James. And I don't think they've been lights out throughout the fall the way that Marco Carducci has. We have seen new goalkeepers emerge, though. We've seen, I think Tristan Henry has really made Forge's kind of sticks his own. And also Mark Village has been generally solid for Pacific.
Won his job back.
Yeah, won his job. Yeah. So,
well, and Matthias Janssens, I feel bad for him.
Another one.
Yeah. The last penalty he had to save, he was like smiling because
he's like,
"Can
I do four in a row?"
Something. Yeah, it's crazy.
And Tristan Henry was great against Olympia.
Yeah,
in that first
absolutely.
Leg. He kept. I mean, he made key saves at key junctures in the game when, you know, after Forge took the early lead. So, but for him, you know, we could have been talking a different result.
I think the fall season has, as we've all mentioned, like emerged some new stars, but also a few players from the spring season that were kind of in the picture have faded away. I think it's, you know, not for any fault of their own, maybe, that as teams evolve and they figure out where they are. But is there a player that you guys would be interested in seeing, you know, have maybe a turnaround in the second half of the fall?
Well, I really want to see Sun Yung Chan come back, because he was spotted in the stands at Clark Stadium with the crowd.
Yeah,
that would be one for me.
I think Sun Yung Chan is a good shout. What about you, Charlie? Is there a player?
I am just wondering kind of what has happened to Ben Fisk out in Pacific.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because he seemed like he was going to be a major part of their right side in the spring, and he's been either injured or relegated to the bench a lot, coming off the bench a little bit in the fall. So we know that he's a talented player with a lot of experience. So I'm wondering maybe what the deal is there. Maybe if he'll start to get a few more minutes in and continue to break out in the fall.
Yeah, my pick was Tyson Farago. I think he had a really good spring, and as we're talking about goalkeepers, but as Matthias Janssens has sort of emerged as the starting goalkeeper, I think Farago is one of those players that, you know, probably deserves to start. He's good enough. He's got the quality to start, and it's a good mix to have, but when you got a goalkeeper in form, you got to stick to him. So that's my pick for my money.
And let's not forget what they did in the spring season, which I thought was quite smart from Rob Gale, playing Janssens and Farago 5 games each.
Yeah, on road. Yeah,
and then going from there. But Farago has been out with a finger injury since, or thumb injury. So
I'd want to see more from Elton John, to be perfectly honest. I think early on, all the talk was he was getting a lot of attention. I think, to be fair, a lot of it was just surrounding his name.
Don't bring it up. Just act like it's not
so
there.
I get it. And I've met him, and he's a you know, pretty personable guy, but it just seemed like, are we even talking about him all that much at all?
Yeah. I think HFX has had this like kind of 2-week layover now, and a lot of the conversation has died down around them, but I'm sure as they approach this latter half, I mean, let's not really rule HFX out either. And, you know, the team really just needed a rest, which is exactly what they got.
Yeah.
And if you're looking at it from that perspective, maybe Stephen Hart's side has something in them in this final 10 matches, which was just predicated on the fact that they needed a second to catch their breath.
Well, HFX has actually a few players that I would think of in his conversation that are maybe a little bit quiet in the fall, like Kota Ida.
Juan Diego Gutierrez.
Maybe even Akeem Garcia we haven't heard much from recently. And this might all be because it's been a tough run for HFX. So maybe now that they've had this break, they might all come back into the picture.
Okay, let's have a little bit of fun.
All right, let's do it.
Uh-oh.
Imagine all of a sudden you could trade players within the CPL.
What are we talking, like MLS rules?
Yeah, Tam, Gam, Pam. I don't know. I don't know all of them, to be honest. I know that
Pam.
Two or three of those. Yeah.
What would Pam be?
Sponsored by Pam. Obviously,
okay. Yeah.
That's a good cross promo. If you could trade players within the CPL, what's a trade that you would like to see or that you think would be like beneficial?
Ooh, good question.
So York 9 needs a striker.
Yeah, that's a good starting point.
I think this is kind of the main thing that we've been talking about with them. So I look around the league and I see, for example, as we've already spoken about, we see Easton Ungaro in Edmonton.
Yeah.
Edmonton's a team that maybe doesn't have that kind of central midfielder presence that can kind of transition play and
like in a proper number 10 or number 8.
Yeah. So if we were making a trade here, if Ungaro goes to York 9 and maybe they send, I don't want to say Manny Aparicio.
No, they wouldn't send
that. It has to be a big ticket item, though.
I'm thinking maybe a Ouattara Murafushi.
Murafushi for Ungaro? No, you'd need to throw some
draft picks.
You need some Tam and a draft pick.
Some conditional.
But I do like the idea of a number 10 for a striker. The problem is I don't think Ungaro's the guy. I think you probably got to look at like someone like Tomi Ameobi and say, look, Ungaro's in form. Ameobi's a little older, and while he's a veteran, you know, veterans get traded all the time. Even on April Fool's, if you're a Toronto FC fan, as you'll recall, one Dwayne DiRosario. shout outs to Diro. I do like the idea, though, of Edmonton acquiring a number 10. I don't know if they'll do it for a striker, but it's an interesting prospect. Definitely another player they could probably look at is Thomas Skublak. I think there's an option there for them, too.
Ties to York region already with League One.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with one that I saw happen in my recent Football Manager save, but that's not why I'm picking it. Zella Langwa to Valor. And I think Dylan Sacramento going the other way.
Ooh.
Sacramento is a player that, because early in the season, everyone's like, oh, they have tons of attacking midfielders and attacking talent at Valor. He just hasn't found his place. For many reasons. Obviously, Petrasso has something crazy like 5 goals in 6 games.
Plus, you got Bustos, Carrero.
Paolucci came in to fill a role. He's doing
Galan great. Galan starting. Yeah.
Works in their system, so I think that would work. And also, I think that Langwa would work better with Valor. You see the way that their fullbacks push high, and like you saw with Rafael Garcia on the weekend. I think that especially if they were going to go to a back three, having Langwa, who's capable of playing high up the pitch, as that wing back would work well.
Totally.
Mine is not because it fills any need. I think it would just be kind of a cool trade, and I'd like to see how the one player moves to the other team and vice versa. Just a straight up Aparicio for Camargo.
Ooh.
That would be great.
Yeah. Wow. I just like to see how Camargo does, you know, with York, and how Aparicio does, you know, with Calvary, and just sort of how they run their respective attacks.
I think it would completely change both teams, though.
Absolutely.
Aparicio definitely plays way deeper. Yeah. Like, Camargo is basically a second striker, and Aparicio is basically a central midfielder.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Because it's kind of like for like, but it's not.
I think there are subtle tactical differences, obviously, and not so subtle between the two and how they'd fit in. But I just think it'd be obviously key players for both. So it'd be interesting to see one of the top key players for both, just sort of switching sides and just see how they do in their new surroundings.
That could be very interesting. I've got another kind of marquee trade. I'm going to go Ben Fisk for Kwame Aua.
That's a fun one.
I'm going to send Ben Fisk to Forge FC.
Would Fisk work at Forge?
I think he'd probably prefer to have a guy like Novak and the kind of attacking midfielders around him like Becker, Tristan Borges. I think like the thing about Forge's attack is it is multi-dimensional, but I also think that there's so many like different rooms for Fisk to fit in. He could play as a number 10, he can play out wide, he can play as like a second striker in a 4-4-2. Having Fisk there is a player that I think can really thrive in that kind of environment where players like to play off of one another, not necessarily in a place like Pacific where, you know, the play is more long balls into the box and it's more, you know, route one football. I think that's kind of Ben Fisk's style. He really wants to connect with his teammates, but those connections aren't quite there yet. Meanwhile, I think Forge also has enough defensive midfield pieces that Kwame Awua, and as well as fullback pieces, that Kwame Awua could probably be served playing in as a defensive midfielder alongside Gonzalez at Pacific FC, finally opening up Michael Silberbauer to have this kind of two-man pivot in midfield where you have Blasco on one side, Noah Verhoeven on the other, or Zach Verhoeven on the other, and then you got your two strikers. I think it's a good trade that works for both teams. Now, Does anybody send Tam or Jam the other way? I don't know.
Oh, it's got, yeah, Jam and Pam.
Jam and Pam.
Yeah. I think you got to
throw. Two Jams, one Pam.
Yeah, I think you got to throw the whole, you got to throw that in the kitchen sink at Pacific to make.
A couple games of note coming up in the CPL and in CONCACAF League. Valor take on HFX on Wednesday, and Cavalry host Pacific on Wednesday as well. Then the big one, obviously, Olympia taking on Forge FC, 10 p.m. Eastern time. Yeah. A late one.
That's one of those ones you stay up for, though.
Yes, no doubt. And then two games on Labor Day with HFX hosting FC Edmonton, and then Valor taking on Cavalry. All the CPL games on One Soccer and Olympian Forge on TSN2, I believe.
Yes, TSN2.
Okay, let's close this out with some just ridiculous statements.
Ridiculous statements.
I think this show deserves that.
Brought to you by Pam.
It's not Jam.
It's not Jam.
It's Pam.
We couldn't get Jam. We had to settle with Pam. One ridiculous hot take for the rest of the fall season.
Ridiculous hot take. Okay. My ridiculous hot take is that Pacific FC will welcome Marcel De Jong back, and then we'll be only one or two players away from running away with the fall season.
Wow, that's a strange callback, because I didn't think you wanted to be called back on that anymore.
No, I saw the new stadium, and I'm doubling down on Pacific. I'm all for the island. Plus, okay. Trust the kids. I
trust the kids for sure.
I think Pacific has something in them, and it's come down to the kind of crunch time to make it happen. So if Pacific has something in them, please have something in you now. Like, please try. If it's going to happen, it's now or never. So I'd like to see, you know, what Pacific FC can look like now that they're in a little bit of a hot kind of run of form, and maybe contend at the very least, get within a couple points.
So I have spoken a lot, maybe too much, about York 9 FC in this podcast, but I'm going to stick with that theme. My absolutely insane hot take is that Michael Cox wins the number 9 starting shirt and leads York 9 FC to the fall championship.
Okay, well, already your thing is impossible, because I'm pretty sure York 9 has reserved the number 9 shirt for its fans and retired
right away.
It. So right away, that's impossible. But for the sentiment of being its starting striker...
You know what I mean.
Yeah.
Michael Cox has been one of those players that, you know, came into this league with something of a reputation. I mean, he was a semi-well-known name in Canadian soccer
pretty
circles.
Pretty good with FC Edmonton a couple years ago. Well, now with Cyrus Rawlings, he's out, I believe, injured.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I heard. So yeah, that, I mean...
It's possible.
I've
been wondering what's going on with him all season, because...
Jimmy, play Michael Cox.
Yeah, basically.
Please.
Let's see what happens.
I think that he's the kind of player that they've been crying out for, because they need kind of that target man that Ryan Telfer and Rodrigo Gattaz can
bounce things off of.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's fair.
So I went with, as good as Halifax has been good at home, they've been absolutely dreadful on the road, only 1 point away from their travels, which was back in June against York. So my hottest of the hot takes is that they're going to run the table in terms of away games from now until the end of the season.
Really?
Yeah. I think they've had this, it's going to turn out to be like an 18-day break before they play Valor on Wednesday. And I think Steven is going to probably took the time, like this sort of layoff, to just sort of really go over things and maybe just assess some things. So I really get the sense that they're going to turn the corner and they're going to start piling up points.
Starting on Wednesday in Winnipeg, right?
Yeah. So I think that's going to be sort of the first of what's going to be, I'm saying, an away run. An away run of consistent points they're going
to
pick up.
I'd like to point out that if that would happen, they would have to get a result away to Forge and then away to Cavalry.
So, yep.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's why it's the hottest of hot takes.
Yeah, never say never.
Yeah. So mine also going to be striker related, kind of like Charlie's. So I'm going to say that Easton Ongaro and Taron Campbell, or either, I should say either, one of them, will fail the score for the rest of the season.
Whoa.
Wow. I think that either, you know, there's a chance that FC Edmonton might go cold. There's a chance that, you know, we mentioned Tommy Amiobi. He could still kind of come in and do a job. And for Taron Campbell, I mean, these are both two young strikers. So who knows?
It is a lot of pressure on the shoulders of young strikers, which is why Jeff Paulus, when Ongaro started hitting this rich vein of form, made sure to warn the media, maybe us specifically, I'm not even really sure, that maybe, you know, cool the brakes, like give the kid a chance to breathe a little and don't put too much expectations on their shoulders. That being said, though, no goals for the rest of the season?
Yeah, zero.
That might be too scathing hot a take for this for this podcast.
Okay, well, that seems like it's a good spot to end it. We'll see you next week. And Pam, call us.